Jews, Christians, and Muslims performing services in the same church. He understood the unity of religion. Mala talks to me again, and he tells me, you need to go to Turkey. I said, why? He said, the teacher that I saw is from Turkey. So I said, Mala, I know you not well. It's 1986. I haven't seen Cape Town. When I want to get to Turkey? He said something very profound. He said, what God wills happens. There's a time and a place. It was 5 years later. August 91, my wife and I landed up in Turkey. It's a very long story. But when we get there, there's something very important to understand. You see, when he went to St. John the Divine, it was a very calm time. But in August 91, it wasn't a calm time. This was post-Gulf War. And Samuel Huntington spoke of the clash of civilizations. The Gulf War, the perception was Christians, Hindus, and Jews on one side, and Muslims on the other side. East on one side, West on one side. And coming from an apartheid past really didn't help. So as we walked inside there, my wife and I looked at each other and said, ooh, we're in the wrong place. Got confused. Who was there? What Miller saw in New York, my wife and I saw in Istanbul. What he saw in St. John the Divine, I saw in the Halveti Jirahi Sufi Order of Istanbul. In as we walked in, Jews, Christians, Muslims, Hindus, people from all faith and non-faith, Americans, Russians, people from Norway, Denmark, Germany, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, Southeast Asia, and parts of Africa. All in the Muslim holy place, post-Gulf War. Nobody's fighting. Nobody's shouting. I'm thinking, what the hell is this? It's impossible. I then started understanding the power of spirituality. You see, you asked at the beginning, why did I give up practice? The patients knew more than me for the start. You know, Indian patients, they always know more than the doctor. And then I said, what is this? It was a calling. You don't go to a spiritual place. The spiritual place calls you. And I understood the power of the spirituality because I didn't know who the spiritual teacher is. I didn't see a picture. I don't know his face. I don't know his name. But the man was sitting there and I tell my wife, that's the man. There was hundreds of people there. I was right, that's the man. Now, normally when you travel, you need to understand this in context. When you travel as a guest, especially as an international guest, when you come to a place, your host will ask, like, where are you from? How's your flight? Where are you staying? Did you eat something? Do you want something? Are you okay? None of the above. In any case, that didn't really bother me, how the flight was, where I'm staying, what I'm doing. What was bothering me is what I'm seeing here. How come all religions and different countries in the Muslim holy place? That was what's worrying me. His first question, what do you see? Not where you come from, which plane you took, where you stayed, what you eat. No. His first question, he addressed my soul because my soul was in turmoil. This was post-Gulf when I understand, how can everybody be here? He says, what do you see? I said, I'm confused. What are Christians, Jews, Hindus doing in the same Muslim place? And Americans and Russians and everybody else. We fought with these guys all over the world. Why are they here? He said, my son, you see right. He said, but you need to understand. Mankind is one single nation. The God of all mankind is one. We just call him by different names. Any imam, Sufi, sheikh, priest, pandit, or rabbi that promotes violence, terrorism, extremism, discord, conflict, confrontation, or disorder is not a man of God. Don't follow him. Anyone that preaches love, kindness, compassion, and mercy is a man of God. Follow him. The essence of religion is love and service. He said, don't waste your time sitting in the corner and praying. The time for prayer is over. Prayer is meaningless. There's no service attached to it. Taking a rosary like we do in our religion, he said, what are you wasting your time for? Of what use is that to anybody? Yes, not saying don't pray. We've got the rule to pray 5 times a day. The point he was making is that prayer without action and service is a pointless exercise. And he said, people wait for you, like the priest said at the dinner. The mercy of God was in the reaction of the children to my son Shaya. What is the use of all of you praying and people say the priest didn't come? Does that help? They want to see you live what you teach. He said, in spiritual terms, we never look at the negative in people. We always look for the positive in people. The word he used is called seer. It's an Arabic word. That you look at the soul of the person and you look for the good. So if a person is known to do bad things, don't emphasize the bad. Find one good thing that the person did. He fed the cat. He gave water to the dog. He picked up something from the street. Pick up something on that and emphasize on that. And the moment you do that, the law of the universe and spirituality is that spirituality will come up, goodness will come up, and badness will slowly decrease. That's the aim of religion, to promote harmony, to bring goodness, to change character without destroying anybody. He says, you spoke about the politicians. You see, we're never going to find a perfect human being. Among the religious teachers, among the spiritual leaders, among the people, you are never going to find a perfect person. Anybody here that's perfect? You say you're perfect, I'm going to ask your wife. You said people have bad habits. It doesn't make them bad people. We need to understand that very clearly. We don't become judgmental about people. So in my spiritual order, there are a lot of different spiritual orders in Turkey. And everybody has a different type of dress. So one of the spiritual orders came with long wings, kind of outfit. And the guy from the other order asked him, like, why are you dressed like that? He said, we take the faults of people and we hide it inside here. He said, but you got no sleeves at all. You got short sleeves. Why you got short sleeves? He said, we don't see the faults of people. What causes havoc in society? Backbiting, negative ideation, talking bad about people. Press forward on the WhatsApp, forward. And you enjoy seeing disharmony and discord and destroying people's lives. Now we're teaching that is unforgivable. It's very, very clear that you're in the world of society, you hide the evil. You challenge it, but you don't advertise it. We got a teaching, you admonish your brother in private, but you admire him in public. How many people do that? So, I fall in love with the teacher. And at that very moment of time, he said, you don't judge people. You don't write off an entire nation, an entire community, an entire group of people because of the bad actions of a few people. That very minute, apartheid left my mind. White left my mind. NGK Church left my mind. Christian left my mind. You know what NGK Church said? Swat Sakhafar, Roy Sakhafar, and Muslim Sakhafar. That was the teaching in NGK Church. And today, all that is gone. So I come back to South Africa, and I go for pilgrimage. And whilst I'm standing in the pilgrimage, the thought comes back, I want to go back to Turkey. 6th August 92, the official date. 10 o'clock after the zikr, the spiritual teacher, I don't know if any of you have experienced the zikr, but when you experience the zikr, you feel God's presence right there. It comes right now. Something you've got to experience to understand it. So in that presence of the zikr, in the God's presence, the spiritual teacher suddenly, no warning, picks his head up, makes eye contact with me, and looks heavenward at the same time. The reason I'm telling all this is to understand the power of spirituality where it's supposed to be driving us, because we're in the religious sector. So he makes eye contact with me, and he looks heavenward at the same time. In fluent Turkish, and I don't speak a word of Turkish, and I don't understand a word of Turkish. But that night, I understood every single word that he said in Turkish. The power of spirituality. He said, my son, I told you, it's not my organization. He said, my son, I'm not asking you. I'm instructing you to form an organization. He even gave the name. He said, the name in Arabic will be Waqful Waqifin, translated, gift of the givers. You will serve all people of all races, all religions, all colors, all classes, all cultures, of any geographical location and of any political affiliation. But you will serve them unconditionally. You will expect nothing in return, not even a thank you. This is an instruction for you for the rest of your life. I was 30 years old. Serve people with love, kindness, compassion, and mercy. And remember, the dignity of man is foremost. If somebody is down, don't push them down any further. Hold them, elevate them. There's nothing more valuable in life than dignity, and it's your role. We have to bring dignity back to the people. If anything brings faith, spirituality, and hope and positivity, is to look after the dignity of people. Clothe the naked, feed the hungry, provide water to the thirsty, and in everything that you do, be the best at what you do. No second grade stuff here. Not because of ego. Ego is destructive. But because you're dealing with human life, human emotion, human suffering, and human dignity. My son, don't ever forget that whatever you do is done through you and not by you. There's no place for ego in the religious sector. We abuse our position. We become God himself. And people turn to us and we exploit that. It's at the moment you think that, the gift is gone. Every time I visited him, I mean to take it 28 times. He says, only one line. Whatever you do is done through you and not by you. All the things that you guys think that I do is not humanly possible. And I'll give you some examples if we can get some time. So I asked him, how come that when you speak Turkish, I understand? And other people speak Turkish, I don't understand. He said, my son, when the hearts connect and the souls connect, the words become understandable. I asked him, what exactly am I supposed to do? I'm a doctor with 3 practices. I'm extremely busy. I work Monday to Sunday. What am I supposed to do and when am I supposed to do this? He told me one line, you will know. I will know what? What am I supposed to do? The moment I walked out of there, the same night on the 6th of August, 1992, it came to me, respond to the civil war in Bosnia. The same month, I took in 32 containers of aid into a war zone all alone. 3 months later, in November, I took in 8 containers of winter items. And the following year, we designed the world's first containerized mobile hospital. A product of South African engineering, South African technology, a world first taken from Africa into Europe. The company is Efrat van der Wetering Engineering. You see the trailers on the road, Efrat. White, Christian, Afrikaner. Instant application of what I learned in August 91. I called Johan and Gerd van der Wetering. They came to my house. And I said, I've got the business. The organization is just formed. Let's design the world's first containerized mobile hospital. They had done a sterilization unit, an X-ray unit, and a theater unit for Arms Corps many years ago. I said, we can build an entire hospital. So they said, okay, let's take on the challenge. I said, but there's one problem. I don't have money to pay you because I'm not a business. So they said, how much you can give me? I said, a deposit of 300,000 rand. I said, but what happens if the money doesn't come in? How do I pay you after that? White, Afrikaner, Christian, prejudice, we have with each other. He said, if you don't pay me, that's my gift to the people of Bosnia. I eventually gave him 28 containers. Theater, X-ray, sterilization, ICU, burns unit, physiotherapy unit, dental unit, casualty, outpatient, orthopedics, labor, plus a generator, plus a bus, plus an ambulance, and 10 containers of backup supplies to run an entire hospital for a whole year if it's completely blocked. With supplies, IV lines, fluids, everything. The teacher said, be the best. I made sure we were going to be the best. CNN filmed the hospital on 1st February 94. And they said the South African containerized mobile hospital is equal to any of the best hospitals in Europe. In 2005, me and my family were invited by the Bosnian government to tour Bosnia. I told them in the beginning of the war, Then once the war is over, you can break the containers and take out the equipment and put it where it's most practical. So when I got there, the containers were broken and the equipment was in the main hospital. The doctor I put in charge at that time was the doctor that was still in charge 2005. And he said, remember you told me that the theater can do everything besides heart surgery. I said, yes, that's exactly what I told you. He says, meet the lady. So the lady is there. He said, this lady had shrapnel in her heart and we removed it from her heart in the same theater that you guys sent. He said, meet these children. There are four children here. All these four children were born to this lady after the shrapnel was removed from her heart in that theater and were born in this hospital. We associate South Africa with faith, with belief, with giving health and giving life. And you increase faith in God Almighty through service. 2010, 12 January, I just walked into my house from overseas. Prime Media calls me and said, you know an earthquake hit Haiti? I said, no, I just walked to the house. They put the TV on. I looked at those pictures. I said, ooh, this one screen, I can tell you now there's 25,000 people dead already. Are you going to respond? Within 1 hour, I said, yes. The search and rescue teams are ready. We are going to respond. But this was a very complicated mission. So we get the teams ready. The Anglican and the Methodist and other church leaders meet my team in Johannesburg. I give Air France the business because the French Consul General didn't charge us anything for the visas. So as a courtesy, I give Air France the business. I write to Air France. I said, will you get my teams to Port-au-Prince in Haiti? They said, yes, we will. I told them, no, you won't. They said, yes, you will. I said, no, you won't. So I said, give me a guarantee in writing. No airline ever gives you a guarantee. They came in guarantee in writing, they will get my team to Port-au-Prince. I said, big mistake. Any case, they give me the email. The teams go to the airport. They fly into France from Paris. Next destination is Port-au-Prince. I knew that's not going to happen. So I phoned the Catholic Society of Joburg. I don't know the guy. He answers the phone. I said, I don't know you. You don't know me. But I need the Pope. For the next 10 seconds, I couldn't talk. What does the Muslim guy want to do with the Pope? I said, oh, are you Christian guys not connected? We Muslims, we're connected all over the world. He said, what do you want the Pope for? I said, I want the Catholic organization to meet my teams in the Dominican Republic, take them across in the Port-au-Prince and look after them. Oh, okay. Close 3 hours later, done. Catholic Relief Services, CRS, and Caritas will meet your teams in Dominican Republic. The teams land. I had one of my team say, we got a big problem. I said, no, there's no flights to Port-au-Prince, isn't it? He said, yes, how did you know? I said, common sense. The earthquake knocked out the harbor, the university, the presidential office, but left the airport behind. How's that possible? The airport is damaged, you can't fly. I said, you guys are flying the next 2 hours, flight change. You guys are being met in the Dominican Republic. Number, yes, it's number. They get to Dominican Republic, board, South African team, welcome. Catholic Relief Services and Caritas. Accommodation, transport, water, visas, food, whatever you need. You see, if we spend less time fighting each other and spending more time working with each other, as mankind is one single nation, can you see what we can achieve? So they came across to Port-au-Prince. We're the only team in the world, but the Mexican team is also Catholic, that stayed with the Caritas people. They were Mexican. Other teams were restricted by the UN to work 3 hours a day. We worked 8 to 9 hours a day. Day 8, 20th January 2010, in the collapsed Catholic Church, my team members start getting sounds in the rubble. Day 8, and 3 hours later, they call me. They pulled out alive, 64-year-old Enazizi. Fractured hip, no food, no water, no oxygen, completely covered by rubble. They pulled her out alive 8 days later from the collapsed Catholic Church. Her first words to my team is, I love God Almighty. Faith and spirituality kept her alive and gave her positivity and hope. And the second team words to my team is, I love you. What is the essence of religion, if not love and service? But could that have been achieved? You were sitting in the house and reading a scripture and not sending out teams to serve. You can't do that. You have to be practical. But another element came out of this. You see, ethics is a big problem. In the medical field, in the NGO field. My teams went to the church that was standing. They washed the walls and they washed the floors. And my teams are mixed. Afrikaner, white, English, Hindu, Muslim, black, all mixed up. They went to the church. And after they watched the church, they said, bring the patients. The kids came. And my teams broke down. I tell them, practice emotional distancing. They couldn't. They broke down. Because the kid's hand was cut. But whoever amputated it didn't do it correctly. So now we have to take the elbow off. Now these are kids where we take the ankle off, take the knee off, not one, hundreds of them. People came from first world countries. They are the ones like, they know everything. They are the masters. They know nothing about ethics and values. Sorry, I'm blunt. And they come because they're practicing on somebody else's child and this child is destroyed completely. And after the procedure is done, go home. And the child asks you to go home where? There's no house. There's no mother. There's no father. There's no grandfather. There's no family. There's no food. There's no shirt. There's no shoes. There's no clothing. Where do we go? Not one, hundreds. We saw a first world team operated on somebody and the person bled to death. Our values are very strict. We sent our teams in. For the credit of first world countries, they said that if you want healing, and you want hope, and you want life, then go to the dream team. And the dream team is from South Africa. That's the recognition they gave us because they follow the principles of spirituality and Ubuntu. No matter what they believe or don't believe, spirituality is inside every human being. You don't have a belief system for that. Kindness and goodness is ingrained in you. It just has to come out. And our mission is to take you out. I have journalists who travel with us, and they said, we don't believe in God. But when we travel with you, we find him. They tell me that on every mission. We find him when we travel with you. That's the power of spirituality. October 2005, we're going to Pakistan to an earthquake. When we land there, the Pakistani general comes and says, please don't go to the mountains. So I said, which hospital are you going to give me? He says, you understand? I say, yes. The team said, what did you come for? He's saying, not going, don't go to the earthquake. I said, the man is telling you there's nothing left there. They're all dead. There's nothing you can do there. It's finished. They told me, I'll give you the cantonment hospital of Rawalpindi. But I said, those that are alive, the doctors are gone, the hospitals are gone, the equipment is gone, the buildings are gone, everybody's gone, but there are people alive here and everywhere. I need to go and fetch them. Can you lend me your helicopters? He said, my friend, look at our condition. 400 villages sank into the ground. The earthquake wasn't in one city. It struck us from Rawalpindi right to Muzaffarabad, right to the Kashmir-India border. An entire region is gone. Not one city, an entire region is gone. How are we going to help you with helicopters? We don't have enough. In disaster management, there's no such thing as impossible. It can't be done. So I look around, I say, ooh, Americans. You know, Muslims and Americans, we have a big problem with each other. So in any case, I see an American guy, big black guy. Emphasis on race is deliberate. So I go there, I say, my brother, where are you from? Of course, I know where the hell he's from, he's got an American badge. Where are you from? He said, I'm from America. I said, you're black, you're not from America. I said, you're from Africa. He said, yes, yes, I'm from Africa. So I said, I'm from Africa too. Now one brother needs help from another brother. So he said, what brother help does a brother need? I said, you know, I need to take my guys to the mountain. There's no helicopters here. Anyway, a brother can help. What are brothers for? Take three helicopters in 2 minutes. Two Black Hawks and another helicopter. He understood the language of the heart. He understood the power of spirituality. He understood the power. He's not a priest. He's no religious man, he's just a soldier standing there with a uniform and say, take three helicopters. If I had asked our government to write to the American government, I'd still be waiting for those damn helicopters. It goes into the mountain and our team stabilized the people and bring them down. In the meantime, the other team walked to Cantonment Hospital of Rawalpindi. And as we walk through, I get the stench of gangrene, the stench of death. Children are lying with no stretcher, no IV lines, no food, no doctors, no nurses, no detergents, low linen. I call the military. I say, hey, what is this? Would you put your mother here? He said, what do you mean? I said, come see. So the CEO comes running. He said, general, Gospel is being decommissioned. I said, are you guys mad? Your hospitals are on the top, all destroyed. The one that's standing, you're going to close. Is there something wrong with you guys? So he said, what can we do? I said, and whilst we're walking around, I have to bring this as a side story for you to understand your own value. First world teams came there. Oh, who are you? Where are you from? They couldn't understand because it's a black, white, Indian, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, all mixed up. So they can't understand where we come from. I think he's from South Africa. Oh, you come from Africa. What did you come to fetch? You guys are always looking for free things. Always come with a bowl in the hand. Always can't do anything. I said, you will eat your words. So the military guy asked me, what can we do? I said, here's a shopping list. You give me this, I'll show you what Africa can do. In less than 24 hours, a hospital that was shutting down, the South African medical team converted it into a 400-bed emergency hospital. Where nurses, doctors, ICU, theater functional, and we did 75 operations a day. And all those coming from the mountain, from the helicopters, were put inside here. And I told those first world country teams, I'll give you permission to work here. We showed our skill, and the following year, the Pakistan president gave us a presidential award. It's not important, but to recognize what Africa can do. Because I'm African and nothing else, and we need to understand that. Something beautiful happened. Two things happened in that story. We were going in the mountains, and I normally carry, I got four cell phones with me. And as I was climbing into the truck, my friend carried the cell phones and my bag. And then he said he's just going to speak to somebody there. So as he walked, the truck driver drove off. So I got no cell phones now. But I didn't worry because we were going in a convoy. So they're going in a convoy all together. And suddenly, I don't know what got into this guy's head. He turned off and he went on his own. He left the convoy. I don't have phones. I don't have GPS. I can't speak the language. I don't know where the guy is. And we're just driving. I said, I'm lost. My friends have gone somewhere else, my team. But as he's driving, I suddenly see in this area, kids on the road, adults on the road, houses destroyed, shivering in cold weather outside, no food, no liquids. I said, I didn't get lost. God took me there because these people are lost, not me, in their own country. So I tell the guy, I don't know how the hell to tell him to stop. So I just did this. He understood that very well. He just stopped. So I said, yeah, I understood that too. So we took the stuff off the trucks and we gave the people. You see what the priest said? The children's response to my son Shaya is how God is, you know, the mercy of God lies. I saw in the eyes of those children, in the eyes of those mothers, in the eyes of those fathers, that they felt the mercy of God Almighty, that God did not forget them. As we offloaded the stuff, the driver didn't understand the other command. He drove off without me. Now I'm left in a country that I can't speak the language. I don't know the people. I don't know where I am. I don't have a map. I don't have phones, nothing. And I'm saying, God, what are we going to do here? If I walk up, maybe I go to Afghanistan. If I go right, maybe I'm in India. If I go left, I land somewhere in the sea. Maybe in the south is Pakistan. Where the hell do I go? The moon comes out. It throws a light on the road. I follow the light of the moon. I said, is that the sample you're telling me to follow? So I follow the moonlight. And I walk, I don't know where I went. And that moonlight brought me exactly into the camp where I left from. The military looked at me like something happened. I said, why are you guys looking at me like that? He said, do you know where you went? The area you went to is the area where all the gangsters and the kidnappers are and where people get killed. I said, I made a casual walk. I came here. Nothing happened to me. They thought I lost it. Something beautiful, more beautiful happened. In December 2005, an Afrikaner lady, Karina Extien, specialized nurse in spinal rehab, physiotherapist, calls me from Pretoria, University of Pretoria, and she says, Dr. Suleiman, I like to go to help the people of Pakistan. So I said, Karina, when would you like to go? Christmas. I said, you can't be feeling well. What does a Christian person want to do on Christian Day in a Muslim country? She says, I got no other time to go. I want to go in Christmas. So she goes in Christmas. And she stands for 3 weeks there. And she makes kids walk. And she makes adults walk. And the day she's leaving, the military cries. The families cry. The doctors cry. The patients cry. The nurses cry. Here was a Christian Afrikaner lady from an apartheid country that brought hope and healing to the people of Pakistan. And she brought some child home to Pretoria to treat the child with a special treatment. In September 2022, I spoke at a function in Durban, Soroptimus International. It's all a woman group. When I finished speaking and I related this exact story, the lady sitting on the front table with me says, I'm phoning Karina now. So I said, do you know Karina? She said, the child that you spoke about stayed in my house. What's the chances of that being a coincidence? In spirituality, there is no coincidence. The final story. November 2022, my friend calls me from Cape Town and says, would you like to meet the new general manager of Turkish Airlines? He's moved from San Francisco to Cape Town. So I said, yes, in my business, I'm a disaster specialist. I need to know everybody. But I said, I will not talk to him now. I will talk to him when it's meant to be. There's no notes. Not writing down, okay, meet the guy from Turkish Airlines for February, nothing. No such thing. February 2023. I'm in the plane, King Shaka Airport. As I get to the plane, the thought comes to me. Remember the guy called you November last year? You better call him now. So I call him. I said, Nisar, the story, this Turkish guy is here. He said, I'll call you back now. Calls me back 2 minutes later, I'm in the plane. And he says, we're meeting at 9:30 at Saray Restaurant at the waterfront. I said, fine. Get off the plane, straight to the restaurant. Meet the Turkish Airlines guy. My first words to him. Muhammad, in the event an earthquake hits a country, can you move search and rescue teams, medical teams, dog handlers, dogs, search and rescue equipment, medical equipment, tents, blankets, food and medicine and bottled water instantly? Life saving is in the first 72 hours. Can you do it with no hassle and no difficulty? Can it be done? Yes, no problem. 5 days later, 6 February, 4:10 a.m. in the morning, an earthquake hits his country. What's the chances of that being a coincidence? 20 million people affected. In 24 hours, our search and rescue teams are on the plane. In 48 hours, the dogs are on the plane, the dog handlers. We land in Turkey, in Istanbul, my second home. As I said, I've been there 28 times. Gift of the Givers was born there. And as he lands, you don't ever tell the government of any country, I'm too clever. You know, I studied in Stellenbosch and UCT, and we're very skilled people. You don't say things like that. You eat humble pie. You fit into the system. My brother, what do you want? Where do you want us? How can we help? Not be very clever. We know everything. 170, listen to this part very carefully. 172 countries responded to the earthquake. Some sent more than one team. So let's say an average of 300 search and rescue teams came. Only 12 teams were selected to go to Hatay. I was in Hatay in November the year before. Hatay was flat to the ground, 99% gone. There's no Hatay anymore, it's gone. Only 12 teams were selected. 2 Chinese government teams, 2 Turkish government teams, Italian team, Jordanian team, Saudi team, Omani team, Serbian team, Croatian team, Bosnian team, and Gift of the Givers. We're the only non-governmental team. Everybody else was from government. 12 teams land up in Hatay. Day 8 again, 13 February 2023, exactly day 8. The dog says, go that one, go to that building. So we go, and we pull out alive a 90-year-old grandmother. 12 floors pancake, on the ground. And that lady's alive 8 days later. We're the only team in the world that had 5 dogs. The Chinese, the others said, can we like borrow a dog? So I said, I'm an Indian. I need to make money. $50 an hour. 2 dogs, $75. Any case, The Bosnian team leader understood, remember, this is Turkey. This is the country from where I got instruction to take the search and rescue to send aid to Bosnia. The Bosnian team leader and the South African teams are only two teams. 200-300 teams. Only 12 teams land up in Hatay. South African and Bosnian were two. The Bosnian team leader comes to my team, touches the team member or the team leader on the shoulder, and then starts sobbing. I said, like, what happened to you? So he takes out the wallet. In the wallet, there's a picture. He pulls out the picture, and there's a baby and a mother, or a woman. He said, that baby, that's me. That mother, that lady is my mother. So what's the point? He said, we know your guy's name. So I said, what do you mean? I was born in the hospital that Gift of the Givers brought to Bosnia in 1993. 30 years later, 300 teams, only 12 teams go to Hatay. And in the 12 teams, one of the guys that was born in the hospital is there. There is no coincidence in spirituality. This is God's grace to you. Maybe you've got time for one last story. When the teacher said, you will know what to do. January 6, 2014. We get a call from Al-Qaeda in the desert of Yemen. They said, are you the guys looking for a South African couple that's taken hostage? We said, yes, we've been telling you that guys from May last year. But we don't know who's calling us. We know somebody has taken the South African couple. So we said, yes, we want to discuss about the couple. Come tomorrow morning, my team member in Yemen, you've got to speak the language, you've got to know them. Come 7 January, 10 a.m. into Aden, come alone. So he goes alone into the house, they take him. And as he walks in, they ask him, do you know we are? We are Al-Qaeda, and you know what we're capable of. What you want? You got a man and a woman. Let's talk about the woman first. It's the mother needs to go home to her children. That's fine, you can have her. Put down $3 million, you can have her. So they allow him to talk to me. I said, tell him no money. Not discussing money here. 10 January, 2014, 3 days. He doesn't know anything about hostage negotiations. Neither do I know anything about hostage negotiations. He hasn't been trained by hostage negotiator. I haven't been trained by hostage negotiator. No intelligence services have trained him. Nobody has trained me. He hasn't done an honors, a master's, or a PhD. Neither have I. In 3 days, we took out Yolandi Corky, out, alive, unharmed, unconditional, no ransom. No agency in the world, no government in the world has taken out hostage in 3 days without even with ransom. They've never done it for 3 days. We knew exactly what to do and how to do it and how to get Yolandi out. And we secured the release of Pierre Corky as well, also 6 December 2014. But the Americans decided to go in with the Green Berets. And both Pierre and the hostage Luke Summers died. We helped get Stephen McGowan out, Johan Gustafsson, Hal van Deventer. We helped the Vatican. We helped other countries advise on how to take hostages out. We knew the system. Who taught us? Nobody. The teacher said, you will know. For 32 years, I know exactly what to do, how to do, when to do, what to touch, when not to touch. Thank you very much.